Good evening, everybody. Stephen Molyneux from FreeDomain, 17th of January, 2025. And we have great questions and comments from people. Let's start off right away from Jeff M. Good evening, Steph. Hope all is well with you, sir. I expect a salute with that. I have been invited to attend a strategic planning meeting by the board at my company. Do you think it would be a good idea to suggest that they allocate 1 to 5% of funds towards Bitcoin? It's a no-brainer to me, but these are boomer no-coiners we're dealing with here. Are you asking me for business advice in a financial matter which I have no understanding of? Thank you, Darbins. I can't possibly give you advice as to whether or not you should have your business allocate 1% to 5% of funds towards Bitcoin. That would be to give you financial advice, which I will not do. So, all right. They'd probably rather invest in some kind of infrastructure they can tangibly use. Yeah. Yes, for sure. For sure. For sure. All right. Hit me with the why. If you've ever dealt with, we're just going to use the word narcissist here in obviously a pretty amateur or totally amateur fashion. Have you dealt with somebody really selfish? You know, the, but enough about me. Why don't you tell me what you think of me, right? Have you dealt with people like that? Has this been an issue for you? Hit me with a why if you have. Yes, you have. Yes, says Claire. Yes, says Pope's Hifter. Sorry, I had a long private call-in show this afternoon, which ended slightly before this show, and I managed to grab two bites of salmon. And now, I like the taste of salmon. I don't necessarily like the taste of salmon forever and ever, amen, which is what seems to happen when you have a bite of salmon. It's like, you know, when I have my cod liver in the morning, it's like, that doesn't taste too bad, except for the next 3 hours when I'm burping the entire contents of pre-1980 Newfoundland oceans. Boy, there's a fairly obscure reference. I did an article, So Long and Thanks for All the Fish, about the government mismanagement of the cod industry in Canada, a 400-year industry destroyed by the greed of just a few politicians. I thought about writing into you about my ex-wife. If I did to her what she did to me, I'd be in prison. Now, by ex-wife, I assume just mean your former wife, not your wife who is now ex-ex. Finally, I can catch a live stream. Catch a falling star and put it in your jumper. Save it for a rainy day. That's not even close to the song. I vaguely remember the lyrics. I do not remember the tune at all. But if I have to suffer with it in my mind, sometimes you have to suffer with it in your ears. Well, you don't have to. But you have, if you're still here. All right. So let's get back. So you have dealt with this kind of stuff, right? All right. Now, from 1 to 10, if you've dealt with a narcissist or a selfish person, from 1 to 10, how bad was it? From 1 to 10, how bad was it? Tell me. One to 10, how bad was it? Because I want to know what kind of pain points I'm dealing with here. Seven, says Tom. Ten, it felt like it didn't even exist. Five. Ten, eight. Recurring theme in my life, says Claire. Unfortunately, 10 with a friendship of more than 10 years. Done with that now. Sorry about this. God, I remember when I could type. That was cool. All right. Led to so many wrong decisions in my life. 8888. All right. Well, it sounds like we've got some pain points to deal with. Got some pain points to deal with. All right. So hit me with a why, if it would be helpful for me to be brutally frank with how to deal with narcissists. I want to make sure that it's going to, maybe this is all deep in the rear view for you and you've dealt with it all and it's distant in the past. Yes. Okay. Yes. All right. You're loving the year of the blunt. The year of the blunt, man. Tommy Chong style. All right. So, people who show significant interest in you when you first meet are dangerous. People who show significant interest in you when you first meet, you know, the people who just look at you and they're very intent and they don't blink very much and they ask you to phone your house when they're at the house and also standing right in front of you, Robert Blake style, right? So the people who are just, they lock in and they're focusing on you and they're listening to you and they're asking questions and they're just absorbing, right? Very dangerous. Very dangerous, because what they're doing is they're scanning for vulnerabilities and they are probing for weaknesses and they are probing for a lack of defenses, right? What do they always do in Star Trek? You know, scanning the enemy vessel. Well, their shields are up here and they're down here, right? That's what they're doing. They're scanning you. So when they appear to have no particular ego of their own, but they're just absorbing you and asking questions of you, they are scanning for holes in the armor. So that's important. Now, do you want people to be interested in you? Sure, of course, right? But to a moderate amount and based upon reciprocity, right? So, what do you do? Oh, I do X, Y, and Z. I say I'm just an axe murderer because that's better. So then you ask them what they do. This is a bit of back and forth, right? But somebody who's like, I'm putting my ego aside and I'm focusing solely on you and I'm intently focused and solely examining and understanding you and are going to ask you lots of questions and you're not really going to get to ask me any questions. I'm just beep, 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 scanning, right? Be wary of those kinds of people. People who ask you outside of call-in shows, it's a situation, right? People who ask you very personal questions very early on. What would you say your biggest weakness is? Okay, thank you for scanning me, you sociopath. Right, so people who ask you really deep questions really early on, they're looking again. If they say, oh, what was your childhood like? Oh, did you have a good relationship with your mother? They're looking, they're just scanning for habits, sign of the box of repetition compulsions, things that they can exploit. It's okay to not unpack your heart like an exploding suitcase with everyone you meet. But of course, so many people go through life. Honestly, I think the majority of people go through life with nobody taking any particular interest in them, which is why people tend to be so susceptible to this kind of like lazy, oh, finally, I see somebody's really taking interest in me. Somebody really cares about me. Right? They're looking for who they can exploit. As somebody who pushes through boundaries in early conversations, right? Like if you say, I don't really want to talk about that, or that's not a big topic for me, or I don't really feel comfortable about that, and they just ask again. They're probing for, are your boundaries real? Right? Are your boundaries real? Or are you just saying stuff? Do you actually have boundaries? People who ask you about your social circle, right? Oh, do you know so-and-so? Oh, how long have you known so-and-so, right? You're at some party. Oh, how do you know the host? Oh, how long have you known him? Blah, 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 right? So what they're doing is they're trying to figure out often if you have friends around you who are looking out for you, right? So if the host of the party is some dysfunctional person and you have been friends with that person for a long time, they know that you have dysfunctional people around you. And therefore, you are unprotected, you are separated from the herd of moral and quality people, and therefore, you can be taken down far more easily. Somebody who does a joke threat early on in the conversation, right? So you say something and they say, well, that's totally racist. I'm just kidding, right? They do a joke threat, right? In other words, that's a shot across the bows to see how you will respond to disapproval. And if you respond strongly and deeply and in a submissive fashion to disapproval, then they are locked in and they're pretty sure that they can manage you through disapproval. Hit me with a why if this makes sense so far. I don't want to overexplain, don't want to underexplain, want to get the porridge just right. Hit me with a why if this makes sense to you. Yes, we're doing all right? Good. Okay. Somebody says, a woman on a dating app first message to me was, what's your deepest, darkest secret? I'm like, no, right. Yeah, that would be somebody who's looking for leverage and power over you, for sure. Now, another way that you are dealing with a selfish person, a narcissist in the amateur sense, is when they provide to you excessive praise when first meeting you. Oh, you're so funny. Oh, that's an amazing story. Oh, what an incredible outfit. I think you're the best looking guy here. Right, whatever. Like if you get a lot of praise early on in meeting, then that is somebody dangling the worm to see if you'll bite the hook. Relationships that start at a very high level very quickly, that accelerate to a very high level very quickly, when they're asking for secrets and your childhood trauma and what your favorite movie is, like it's all just probing for things. Like, I'm telling you, I have seen guys asking women who their favorite actor is, and when the women say Brad Pitt, the guys will start to act a tiny little bit like Brad Pitt. You know, that laconic, slow-moving, even the way he, in Moneyball, he bites the top off the magic marker. Like, even the way he spits that is assertive. The man is just an assertiveness, juice of dominance. And so, if you say, what's your favorite movie? Oh, I love that movie, right? And if they seem, another thing, if they seem to be in alignment with you about an improbable number of things. Now, the more you're original, the more you think for yourself, the less likely it is that anyone's going to be in alignment with you about anything. But if they seem to be, oh, I love that band. Oh, that's a great movie. Oh, he's a fantastic comedian because he's not Bill Burr, who just completely cucked. Oh, God, it's gross. Ugh. I think they're doing fantastic things out in California. They didn't make any mistakes. Repulsive. Anyway, it's even more repulsive to get mistaken for him and Billy Corgan and Phil Collins and a pink bowling ball and a giant thumb and an ostrich egg. Not necessarily in that order. Bill's burnishing the balls of those in power. If there is a strange familiarity about someone when you first meet them, if you feel that there's a deep connection and that this can happen romantically in particular, right? If you feel like there's this deep connection that they just kind of click together and they lock in, it's like your jigsaw puzzle pieces that fit together, they're molding themselves to your personality in order to take control, right? They're settling into the seat of your soul in order to grab the joystick. Sexual innuendos are not accidental. They're never accidental. So be aware of that. Saying Bill Burr is cucked is an insult to people who are cucked. He's beyond cucked. He's pegged. Hey, Steve. Nice to see you tonight. What else? When they inquire about finances, oh, you must be doing very well. Oh, when did you get into Bitcoin? Oh, right. When they start inquiring into finances, or they are trying to very quickly establish your status. Oh, what do you do for a living? Oh, where did you go to school? They're trying to establish your status. Then you're certainly dealing with a status seeker. You're certainly dealing with a status seeker. They're always a little bit surprised, because often I will, I mean, because it's kind of true. I really, I mean, I know I work for a living, but if I was unemployed with infinite resources, I would do this. So I just say, oh, I'm, you know, and I did retire from my business career. And I say, oh, I took early retirement, or I'm unemployed, or something like that. It's not totally false. But you can see, you can see for the status seekers, you can see that if you say I'm unemployed or I'm retired, you can see that, well, maybe retired, they think, you know, oh, he did really well or whatever, right? But you can see the look go down, right? Go down, right? So there's that. That is another issue when you're seeking somebody of particular status, right? If they are very curious about yourself, but quite shielded about themselves, then they're looking to probe you and not give you the ability to probe them. Because remember, a narcissist is usually scanning for victims. They sure as hell aren't scanning for another narcissist, because then they can't victimize them as much, right? The obvious ones are things like, if somebody has, let's say that somebody's in their early 30s and single, then, you know, the basic question is why? The basic question is why? And if it's never their fault, and you know, they just happen to run into some crazy people, and can you believe it, and so on, they reveal themselves that way. If a woman significantly plays the victim, that is an appeal to the vanity of the male, and that is a form of manipulation, right? I really appreciate the donation. I don't know enough about E. Michael Jones to have anything intelligent to say about this issue. Sorry about that. But I appreciate the support. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show, of course. I do appreciate that. So John says, how should you go about asking questions early on in a relationship? I feel like after a deep connection, one of you opens up. So a quality person wants to see reasonable levels of caution from you. A quality person, right, wants to see reasonable levels of caution from you. So for instance, if you just met a woman and she's totally happy to take you back to her place, then she has the self-defense capacities of your average sea cucumber. So that does not show a reasonable level of self-protection, right? So self-protection is self-respect. So anybody of quality is not going to expect you to open up about everything the moment that you meet them, because then they're going to understand that you don't have rational levels of self-protection. Now, at the same time, you don't want to be hoarding everything about yourself, you know, 6 months into a relationship, because that's an excessive level of self-protection that actually turns into a kind of self-asphyxiation. But having that level of caution without paranoia, right? Caution without paranoia. You know, there are people who, oh yeah, I met these guys. I was talking to a woman not too long ago. I met these guys at a party and we went back and, you know, it's like, you don't know these guys. What are you going to some party for? Street proof, I mean, especially for women, right? You have to be cautious in life. I mean, sadly, you have to be a lot more cautious now than you used to be. I mean, I grew up in a ridiculously high trust society and I had to kind of adjust to that going forward. But reasonable levels of caution is very important. And now, obviously, if somebody keeps offering you more to drink, that's a warning flag that they're trying to get you, because alcohol is a disinhibitor, right? It lowers defenses. And so if somebody is consistently saying to you, oh, let me get you another drink. Oh, let me freshen you up. Oh, you're getting thirsty there. Oh, stop nursing that drink and live a little, have some fun, right? Obviously, if they offer you drugs and so on, right? They're just trying to lower your defenses, right? I mean, there's the red pill, the blue pill, and then anything Bill Cosby gives you, right? So watch out for that. People, of course, who have status too young are usually pretty narcissistic. So a man's priming earning years tend to be sort of maybe mid-late 40s to mid-late 50s. Like, that's where all your hard work and your contacts and all of that, that's where it all pays off for a lot of men, right? And so it's kind of funny to me, women who want young, wealthy men are like men who want old, fertile women. Well, I want all of that wisdom and maturity that a woman has at 45, and I want 4 kids. It's like, you get 45, you ain't getting any kids. And if a woman wants a man to be young and wealthy, she is dreaming. She's dreaming. The only way she's going to get that is if he's inheriting his money, which means he's got terrible parents, which means she's going to have a terrible relationship. All right, let's get to your questions and comments. So yeah, those would be some of the tips. I'm happy to do more if people want, but sometimes less is more. I mean, never on this show, but I've heard it occasionally from time to time. All right, Frank writes, my girlfriend grew up using anxiety as motivation to do everything. Sorry, that was really bad. It's a terrible line reading, to do everything. My girlfriend grew up using anxiety as motivation to do everything, work, exercise, studying, etc. Since we've been dating, things have calmed down, and now she doesn't feel constantly anxious. She's worried that without anxiety and a little chaos, she doesn't know what will drive her, what is behind that, and what can she do to address that concern? Well, sorry, I'll get to that question. So on Wednesday, we had a woman who's like, well, I'm the exception to the general rule. This is like, whenever you propose a general rule, women are like, well, I'm an exception to the general rule. And so this showed up on Wednesday. And now this woman is, when I talked about, in general, men, like a man's physical prime is like his early 20s, and very few men in their early 20s, legally, unless they happen to be some sort of athlete or entertainer or something like that, or criminal, right? Very few of them are going to have any money, right? So this woman writes, my husband is young and already owns a house and makes good money and is tall. I suppose I'm dreaming right now. Yeah. It's not exactly about you. It's about a general trend. And the humble brag is not particularly appealing. Just so you know. You know, like if you're in a room full of people in their 60s and they're all talking about their health issues, and you're like, well, and they say, yeah, most people over 60s have health issues. I'm in perfect health. I don't have any health issues whatsoever. I don't know what's wrong with all you people. I know, Steph. I just thought it was funny. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm happy for you. That's great. But I guarantee you, your husband is not in his early 20s, right? So yeah, just the women who want men to be both young, hot, and wealthy, it's impossible. All right, it's impossible. Tim says, I often share my motivations so the other person doesn't worry that I'm being manipulative somehow. I think that's anti-narcissist behavior. No, he's in his early 30s. You got me.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. And it could be that he's just an amazingly talented moneymaker, but how did he end up making all of this money? I mean, maybe he got into crypto. It could be any other number of things. Maybe his father owns the company, and right, you know, this is, I'm not saying this is him, right? When he was in his early 20s, he had $200 in his bank account and lived in the woods.
Right.
Right. So if you ask your husband, do you think that you are better physically now than you were 10 years ago? He's not going to say yes. We can only dream to have anywhere close to the early 20s as a man. Right. So, yeah, how did he make all of his money? Did he just save like crazy? Did he invest? And if he got into something like, I don't know, he owns apartment buildings, usually somebody has to lead you into that sort of thing. And I'm just curious. Yeah, Tim, I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're saying, if you can explain it in a different way. I don't know how sharing your motivations is anti-narcissistic behavior. If you can give me an example, I would appreciate that. So anxiety is a motivation to do everything. Well, the fight or flight mechanism is a hack for achievement that burns you out. So you can panic, you can freak out, you can work excessively hard because you're terrified of failure, because you feel like you're only going to get one shot, and right, you can do all of that stuff, and you will actually achieve a fair amount. All right, this is the Stephen King story, Quitters Inc., which is worth reading. It's one of the few things. He is a software engineer, she says. He started as an intern and is now the principal engineer. He's been working there over a decade, more than quadrupled his salary, pulled himself up by the bootstraps. Wow. Like he paid for his own university and everything? That's incredible. I mean, that seems, if you're in the States, that could be a lot of debt, right? But that's, so he pulled himself up by the bootstraps. That's amazing, honestly. Massive props to the guy. If he managed to, I mean, if he did it without any education, that's great too. But if he paid for his own education and so on, that's very cool. Good for him. Good for him. And how did he learn all the business skills? That's very cool. Very cool. All right. So you can get yourself, you can force yourself to do things. No question. You can force yourself to do things. You just can't keep forcing yourself to do things because life is pretty fucking long, man. Ev says, oh, life is short. Life is short. No, it's really long. It's really long. So life is long if you're making yourself do stuff in particular, because, but your achievements will be short. Forcing yourself to do things, making yourself do things, bullying yourself to do things. Yeah, it works for sure. It doesn't generally work for creative endeavors, and it doesn't work in the long run at all. So if you look at life as a marathon, you make entirely different decisions than if you look at life as a sprint. So living life with a long time horizon is K-selected. Living life with a short time horizon is R-selected. So one of the things that you really need to focus on is with regards to motivation, that forcing yourself to do stuff is penny wise and pound foolish. You will achieve a lot in the short run and you will burn out in the long run because your adrenals, your fight or flight mechanism can only take so much, and then eventually you just run out. I mean, this was to some degree my experience in the software industry. That I just pushed myself hard, worked hard. I got maybe 7 or 8 years in. And part of it was I just got tired of being a slave to the marketers and the salespeople who would just promise everything. And then I and my team would have to pay for it while they made, with our time, while they made all the money. All right. So you can't win a marathon by sprinting. You can't. You have to pace yourself, right? And at some point, everyone's pride rebels against slavery. And if you are doing things out of a fear of anxiety or negative consequences, at some point, everyone's pride rebels against the enslavement of terror-based motivations. I mean, I remember many years ago, I had a girlfriend. It was kind of funny. There's a character in Seinfeld named Elaine who gets mad at her boyfriend and she says, "That's it. We're broken up for the rest of the day," right? And so if you've ever been in a relationship with someone where if you don't do what they want, they'll just threaten to end the relationship or threaten to escalate or escalation with the goal of having you submit or subjugate yourself. And people will do that for a while. I mean, aggression works. Otherwise, we wouldn't have it. Aggression works for a while. But eventually, people's pride rebels. And it does the opposite of working. Yeah, and I remember I had a girlfriend who would just, you know, get upset and escalate and, well, I could just leave, right? And I would be like, no, let's talk it out or whatever it is, right? And, you know, I'll give a certain amount of grace to that. I mean, it's not like I've always been the most perfect tempered human being in the known universe. So maybe I should just leave or something like that, right? And, you know, if someone's having a bad day, you can give them some, at least I can say what you should do. I can give them some grace for that. I really can. But once you see that as a real pattern, right? And I remember that last time. She was like, "Well, maybe I should just leave." I'm like, "Not maybe." It's a shock, right? Wait, it's not working. My escalation is not working. So it's the same thing with bullying yourself. Bullying will work. Yeah, you can make yourself do some amazing things through terror. But we are not designed to live in a perpetual state of fight or flight. Right, fight or flight is bring down the animal, escape from the bear, win the sword fight. A fight or flight is not general anxiety for 10 years. Like, we are not designed for that. It's one of the roots where shell shock came from in many ways, was just this being endlessly bathed in stress and helplessness drove people insane. So just tell her that she is stealing from the future for the sake of the present. Like, you know, if you don't exercise, you are stealing from the future for the sake of the present. Right. I don't like doing weights. I don't hate it, but I don't like it. And if it wasn't good for me, I sure as hell wouldn't do it. Right. I don't like having to stretch my hamstrings every night. Every night, stand on the stairs, lower my heels, stretch out my hamstrings every single night. Because if I don't, I get Jimmy legs. Because when I was growing up, I had lumbago, which is, I think, where your bones grow faster than your tendons. And I had to take these crazy baths to relieve the ache. And it really interfered with sleep. And it was a mess because I have the tendons of a dwarf and the frame. What is the average height? 5'9" or something? I'm just a shade under 6 feet, so I'm not super tall, but I'm certainly taller than the average. But I've never been able to touch my toes. I have very little flexibility. And all these people are like, "Hey, man, you just got to stretch every day." It's like, it doesn't make your tendons longer. It just means that the muscles that control them get a little better at relaxing, and you get a little more comfortable with the pain. It'll not make your tendons longer. Not with these tendons that hang around like loose fishing twine or like the fat on someone who's lost 200 pounds, like the skin, right? It just doesn't make them longer. Anyway, so I don't want to do that every night, but I do it because otherwise I get Jimmy legs and I can't sleep. My legs ache I have to keep moving them, and it's bad on planes, right? I have to do these crazy stretches at airports before I get on a plane. Otherwise, I have a torture of a plane ride because my legs are just restless and moving and jimmying and all this kind of stuff, right? So I don't like doing these things. I mean, nobody likes brushing their teeth, do they? Nobody likes going to the dentist. We do these things because, right, we don't want to burn the future for the sake of the present, at least not too much, right? So you can force yourself to do stuff and it will work. In the same way, you can say to your girlfriend, if a guy kidnapped you and locked you in his basement, would you be living with him? Well, technically, yes. But you wouldn't be falling in love with him, and you wouldn't be in love with him. You'd be bloody terrified, right? So without anxiety, she doesn't know what will drive her. But you got to trust yourself enough to find out what you want without being bullied. Otherwise, your whole life is just being bullied, and you never escape your childhood. You say that her parents motivated her through fear. Yep. You got to find out who you are in the absence of threats, or you'll never have an identity at all. Who am I? Who am I? Who am I when I don't have to do anything? Who am I without obligation? Who am I without threats? Who am I without bullying? Who am I without pacifying the expectations and instigations of others? Who am I in a void of pressure? It's an important question. Who are you that is not just reaction, right? Who are you that is not bounce off? Like a pinball, bing, 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 going all over the place, right? Who are you when you don't have to be or do anything? Right? It's really important to understand that, or you're not going to have a true self to build from. You're just not. And you'll spend the rest of your life resentful, right? That's the great prize of conformity. It's the great curse of conformity, is resentment. The people who force you will get you to comply, but you'll resent the shit out of them over time. And I really dislike resentment. It's a weakness of mine. Don't get me wrong, right? I mean, I want to be clear about this. It's a weakness of mine. I despise it. I loathe resentment. I loathe resentment. Whenever I meet someone who's resentful, I know that they're selfish, because they would rather be right in the moment, even if it means sacrificing everyone else, then have power, right? So, you know, the people who blame, oh, my ex was just crazy. There was no way for me to know. My ex was just crazy. Drove me crazy. She did this, she did that, right? Resentful. Negative. Complaining. Well, that just means that they would rather sacrifice their own self-esteem for the sake of a petty victory in the moment, a victory which is only visible to fools, and which looks like a total loss to anybody with a shred of wisdom. They would rather burn up their free will on the altar of their own vanity than take responsibility for their own choices. Resentment is the bitter weed that grows out of believing that you are an inert agent that people do things to, and you don't make any choices, or whatever choices you make are purely in reaction to other people's choices. Resentment is self-abdication. Resentment is saying other people are responsible for what happens in my life, and I am a mere victim. And it's perfectly fair and valid and right in children, but in adults, it signifies significant toxicity and imminent manipulation and an allergic reaction to basic truths. Oh, sorry, Frank, I misread that. Frank wants to correct me. I didn't say that her parents motivated her through fear. That was someone else's comment. My apologies. Thank you for correcting me. I also wanted to correct that I talked about salting the earth. Salting the earth, apparently, and I believe this now, salting the earth is an analogy. It didn't actually happen in history. They didn't actually salt the earth. Salt was too precious and valuable and expensive to salt entire fields full of, right? So I just wanted to mention that. Somebody corrected me on that, and I really do appreciate that correction. And I'm just passing it along to you. All right, let's see here. Oh, this is the woman whose husband is successful in his early 30s. I think his parents helped with university. You don't know if he paid for his own university? Come on. Come on. I don't believe that's true. I think you're hedging. Have you seen the female delusion calculator? I got standardsbro.com. I think is it. When we started courting, the calculator told me he doesn't exist. LOL. Yeah, for sure. For sure. In relation to tech marketers overpromising, read Steph's book, The God of Atheists, is an excellent tale, and it's free. Thank you, Kairos. You always seem to me the Lord of Time. Yes. Yes. He's been a pretty solid, and has been a Molinovian, Molinusian, Molinuxian. What was it? I remember when I was writing a lot, and my English teacher in university, still remember his name, actually. My English teacher in university said of my writing, you know, it's tough because, you know, you have the makings of a great writer. What are we going to refer to you as? It can't be Molinovian. Maybe it'll have to be Stefanesque. It's a Stefanesque style of writing, which I thought was very nice. You just grab onto these little things that you use to get your way up, these crampons that you use to get up, right? Claire says, I know of someone who has completely crashed and burned after living, breathing, and eating anxiety for more than 2 decades. Now they are bedridden with deep sleeping issues that is further deepening the problem, but they can't not be anxious. Just don't know how to not overthink and overanalyze everything constantly. How can one get out of that living situation? Well, the brain is groovable. Groove is in the head. Yeah. So yeah, the brain is groovable. The brain takes groups. All habits start as cobwebs and end up as chains. So if you are addicted to anxiety, that's just how you're, like, think of a salmon in a swift current. That's how your neurons line up. They line up that we get shit done by being anxious. And there's no other way, right? You have to find a way to get things done in life without being anxious, without bullying yourself, without bribing yourself. I mean, I still struggle with this. Oh, I got to do some boring, stupid paperwork. Well, I'll have a nice coffee afterwards. It's like, you know, so much of modern life is just doing shit that you shouldn't have to do that you don't want to do, right? No paperwork. I mean, you know, in Spain, in the Middle Ages, the average peasant had five months of holidays a year and no paperwork. If you run any kind of business, you know, the rules are constantly changing. And it really is just a massive make-work project for endless reams and rallies of lawyers and accountants, right? Lawyers in the bureaucracy making money for lawyers in the free market. The metabolism used during sprinting is different from the metabolism used during jogging. Sprinting is anaerobic and jogging is aerobic. All right. This is why the conventional understanding of weight loss isn't sustainable. Bro, just starve yourself. Yeah, it doesn't work. You can't white knuckle it forever, right? All right. She writes about her relatively wealthy husband. I can be critical because he's not super, quote, fun in an energetic way, but that's because he's emotionally very level. So no extreme highs or lows. I am more of an extreme high and low person, actually. So when somebody's super level, I feel like my energy can be too much. Well, I mean, but he's a team lead because he's not super emotional, right? Super emotional team leads. Oh, yeah. Let's go on the roller coaster, right? John says, very interesting points. I felt like I lost 20 years due to my childhood. Long story short, I treated life as a sprint, as a way to make up for the time that's gone with the wind. Someone says, that's amazing to this woman. Hearing you talk about your husband makes me want to work even more. I've been working quite hard on my career with a good degree of success. Also, I plan for years now to give a girlfriend of mine real-time relationships. Right. I had a conversation. It's a call-in show. It's a public call-in show. It'll be out, I'm sure, soon. But it was a guy who was still enmeshed in a corrupt and immoral family system. And we went through the exercise of, well, what does a quality virtuous woman, he was in his late 20s. I said, well, what does a quality virtuous woman see when she is in your environment? Or she sees this crazy corrupt family, she sees you bowing down before it, and she sees that she won't have any real authority because you're going to kowtow to the irrational and corrupt in your life and at the expense of the virtuous and moral. And he's like, so I got to prepare myself for this woman who's coming down the pipe. I'm like, bro, she might already have come and gone. She might already have come and gone. If that doesn't give you goosebumps, I don't know what will. Do it now, because you don't know when she's coming. She could be here tomorrow and you should have done it. You should have cleaned up your social environment 6 months ago. She might have come and gone. She might have seen you across the room, saw the flash of submission in your eyes as you laughed at an unfunny joke from a dominant person and said, no. All right. Question. I was laid off yesterday. I'm sorry to hear that. I have a decent amount of savings and I'm not in a bind financially. I'm a software developer. A former coworker referred me a job listing that I fit well. It would be a 20% raise, but it is for a cannabis e-commerce site/company. I have major reservations about working for a company like that. Would I not be profiting from people doing what I consider to be dumb lifestyle choice and those self-medicating, even if it is partially marketed as medical? You donated. Thank you, Lloyd. I appreciate that. You know, there's no particularly obvious solution to the problem of overlapping corruption, right? I mean, I've mentioned this before. This is when I was still a minarchist, so it wasn't so bad, but I did business with military concerns in the distant past. I would say, obviously, you know this, if you have a choice, don't do it. Because you are contributing, unless it's purely medical, right? But you are contributing to people's dissociation and time wasting. So keep looking as if you don't have a job, and if you're starving, take the job. That would be my particular solution. Somebody says, I've very much been sprinting, trying to make up time, but my health issues are a huge roadblock that I just can't tough guy my way out of, like I used to do when they affected me in my 20s. I'm sorry about that. What are your health issues? The readiness is all. It's a great line. It very much affected me. From Hamlet. I love this quote. I've read it before. I will read it again. We defy augury. There's a special providence in the fall of a sparrow. If it be now, 'tis not to come. If it be not to come, it will be now. If it be not now, yet it will come. The readiness is all. Since no man of aught he leaves known, what is to be to leave betimes, let be. Sorry, the last bit, who cares, right? We defy augury. Augury is a form of prophecy. We can't see the future. Right? There's a special providence in the fall of a sparrow. If it be now, 'tis not to come. It's happening now. If it be not to come, it will be now. If it be not now, yet it will come. The readiness is all, right? Stuff's going to happen now or it's going to happen soon. And the readiness in life is everything. I studied computers for years so that when an opportunity came to be the principal architect of a big software project, I was ready. I studied philosophy for decades before podcasting came along. And sure as Sherlock, I wouldn't be able to do any of this shit in a university or at a publishing house because I ain't no fucking communist. I did self-knowledge for years and therapy for years before I met my wife. Then I was ready. The time to plant a tree is not when you desperately need the shade, because it's going to take 10 or 15 years to grow. You can't dig for water when you're already desperately thirsty. Prepare for things in life. Do not wait to react. You will lose every time. I went to theater school so I could act like a philosopher. No, I mean, I wrote for decades, and then I just happened to get my first book published when I met my wife, and that's one of the things we talked about to begin with. So while I've never made a fortune as a novelist, I have something far better than a fortune, which is a fantastic wife. Be ready. Be ready means prepare for shit you don't even have a clue that's coming. I did not get into computers so that I could become a chief technical officer. I just loved them. I did not study philosophy from the age of 15 onwards thinking, oh, you know what? Oh, I've got a great idea. In my mid to late 30s, like 20 years from now, maybe there'll just be this magical way of sending my thoughts all the way around the world virtually for free. You don't wait till you get sick to exercise, and you don't wait until you get fat to diet. Diet and exercise are a constant of living. I never, ever eat all that I want to eat. I went out for lunch with my wife today. We had some Indian food. Indian food, I can just keep, right? Because the bowls and a little bit of naan, you just dip like that, snap my hand away, smack my hand away from the mutta paneer and the saag paneer. Those little cubes of cheese and spinach are so good. I feel well lubricated after some Indian food. And as long as I show them, I don't show them the outside when they say, how spicy do you want it to be? I don't even show them the outside of my forearm because it's darker. I show them the inside and I say, pale, yea verily, to the level of albino / vampire. Super white. You don't make till the middle of winter to start hoarding food because the food's long gone. Be ready. So everybody thinks, well, I'll deal with it later. I'll, you know, maybe I'm surrounded by corrupt relationships, but I'll work to clean them up later, later. Nope. Later is too late. Later is too late. David Lynch just died at the age of 78. Let me ask you this. What age was David Lynch when he started smoking? Famous director. Corrupt and evil guy, in my opinion. At what age was David Lynch when he started smoking? No, it wasn't a buffet, the Indian buffet we ordered to the table, but I could just, you know, we're chatting away, great conversation with my wife, just nibble, oh, stop it. This woman says, both of us were regulars in the Free Domain Telegram chat about 4 years ago and I ran a channel with a mission For disseminating homestead/self-sufficiency information and guidance, I made my own group chat and invited the free domainers over. My husband was one of them. We stayed and chatted in groups on Telegram for about 2 years. Bingo, bango, bongo. And his penis got very longo. See, I can rap, just not well. No, he was 8 years old. David Lynch was 8 years old when he started smoking. According to David Lynch. David Lynch had how many marriages? How many marriages did David Lynch? Right, so David Lynch finally quit smoking in 2022 after he had emphysema so bad he couldn't even cross from one side of the room to the other. Which shows that you can still have a great mane of silver hair and be dying of smoking. He had 4 marriages, and David Lynch quit smoking in 2022. Now, his father used to smoke a pipe when David Lynch was a little kid, but after his father got pneumonia, he quit smoking pipes, and then David Lynch, I think, started picking up smoking pipes. He said his father taped over the... I did a whole David Lynch thing today, because I want to talk about David Lynch, but... Oh, the David Lynch thing? It's totally fucked up. It's beyond fucked up. I read a bunch about David Lynch today. I was going to do a whole David Lynch thing. And then I watched the movie, about half of the movie, called Blue Velvet. This is the artistic genius is actually quite easy. Oh, he's such a visionary, such an artistic genius. It's actually pretty simple. All you have to do is have weird things happening and have people sitting around being paralyzed, looking like they're about to throw up, and then have some midget dancing in the background. It's so deep, man. It's so deep, man. Guy shows up with a human ear. Well, that's interesting. Well, let's have a take a look at that. Wow, that really is something we want to look into. Blah, blah, like just be completely dissociated. So have weird shit happen, have people completely ignore it, sit there, spaced out, dissociated, that Kyle MacLachlan 1,000-yard stare. Everyone's miserable. Nobody says anything about the weird things. And the weird people are strangely confident. Blue Velvet is monstrous. Now, of course, I did look into David Lynch's childhood because his movies are about as corrupt a thing as humanly possible. But he says his childhood was great. He says his parents were wonderful. We can't make things up. But the level of vileness and corruption and horror in David Lynch films can scarcely be over-exaggerated. I mean, Dennis Hopper is terrifying and insane in that movie. And I cannot watch rapes, of course. Like it's, I have to fast forward. I don't care if I miss the best dialogue on the known planet. Monstrous. I've never watched the scene between Marlon Brando and that French woman in movie where he rapes her. Last Tango in Paris. I won't. David Lynch is lying about his childhood. Well, some shit happened. Why is there this constant violence, degradation, humiliation, rape, dissociation? I mean, Laura Palmer, I never watched, what was his big one on TV? Oh, it's hovering right at the edge of my brain. But his character, Laura Palmer, Twin Peaks, his character Laura Palmer is murdered, and she, I think she was some cheerleader or seemed to be from some very successful person, but then it turns out that she was a fetish model. She was a sex worker. She had been viciously sexually abused as a child. So it's all about, everything seems fine. And this is the opening scene in Blue Velvet, is all of this nice 50s wonderful thing. And then it goes down through a guy dying into the ground where the beetles are all eating each other, and the soundscape of just masticating beetle jaws and juice and blood is just like so. Is going below the surface is all underneath is just vile and wretched and gross and horrifying and horrible. And the man had a vicious temper. You can see him swearing at people while making movies. And of course, the fact that he was allowed to make movies and encouraged to make movies and funded to make movies in general means that it's nothing but corruption. And he spread terror and dissociation in every one of his movies. What did I see? I saw The Elephant Man. It was okay, but of course it's a vile story as a whole. I never saw Eraserhead. Because that hair, you just know that this is just going to be horror as a whole. I saw Blue Velvet on the recommendation of a friend of mine who later ended up in prison. Not accidental. This is the same guy who said, hey, man, you got to go see Paris, Texas.
Oh, my God.
Anything with Harry Dean Stanton and it's going to be Disassociation Fest 101. And Kyle MacLachlan, too. Completely incomprehensible actor. Laura Dern and Nicolas Cage. Raising Arizona. I think that was Coen Brothers' first movie.
The world is pretty tough for the little ones.
I remember watching David Lynch made the first Dune with Kyle MacLachlan and Patrick Stewart and Sting and a couple other people. I found it, again, gross, disgusting, vile, pustules, and just horror. Just horror. As ugly a thing as can be conceived of. And all of the supposed virtues in life turn out to be thin veneers covering a bottomless pit of Dantean viciousness and ugliness. Oh, was it Wild at Heart? Yeah, I've never seen Wild at Heart. I've never seen Mulholland Drive. I can't do David Lynch any more than I can do self-mutilation on my testicles with a cheese grater. And it is, you know, and I use this term advisedly because I recognize it's been overused, but to me, David Lynch films are just bottomlessly misogynistic and incredibly sexist, right? Incredibly sexist. The women always have to be gorgeous and they always have to get naked and then they get brutalized and it's just like, bro. And, you know, so in Blue Velvet, spoiler or two, right? So in Blue Velvet, there's this guy, seems like, you know, average guy. Kyle MacLachlan has like no vocal presence whatsoever. I mean, an actor should put something into his voice, but I suppose this comes from the direction, but the actor is just like, no, I'm fine. This is the way I do things. No, this is just me talking. And it's so empty. He's a Ken doll. He's got that shiny hair and that alabaster skin. And he just is a completely empty person. And he finds a human ear, you know, it's an eerie story, right? So on the nose, right? He finds a human ear in a field, takes it to the police, and then the policeman's, or the detective's daughter tells him that there's this singer, and he's going to break in to the singer's house, and he's going to find out about this ear, and it's like, why? There's no motivation for any of this. He's there in town because his father, I don't know, got stung by something, had a heart attack, and is in hospital, and there's absolutely no human motivation. Why would this guy, who is a pretty genial guy, who works in a hardware store, why would he suddenly want to explore the underworld of criminal motivations and commit crimes in order to explore this ear thing? Like, it makes no sense. This is not how human beings operate, unless there's some specific pathology in his history that would have this make some kind of sense. But it doesn't. It does. It does, has no motivation. No. And then a very young Laura Dern plays this teeny bop girl, the daughter of the detective. And, you know, the Kyle MacLachlan character is going further and further into this incredibly dangerous underworld with this true psycho played by Dennis Hopper, who, you know, sucks on some nitrous oxide and then rapes Isabella Rossellini while constantly bleating out the word mother. I mean, it's really It's completely psycho. And David Lynch, in his own words, blew up cows and killed animals, shot chipmunks, and also his father hunted down and slaughtered a porcupine because he said porcupines come to the top of trees and kill them. And his father was a tree surgeon. And of course, his father dealt with rotten trees the whole time, or trees, since you'd need a tree expert, trees that looked healthy maybe on the outside but were rotten on the inside, like the opening of Atlas Shrugged. So maybe there was his fascination with death and decay and so on. He also started dating in grade 2 or grade 3, started smoking in grade 8. Of course, that tells you a lot about what is going on with his family and his history as a whole. But it is, yeah, it is absolutely monstrous. So Laura Dern plays this sort of blonde cutesy pie girl. And as Kyle MacLachlan marches into this suicidal activity with these complete psychos and murderers, she then decides to just kiss him and start a relationship with him. It makes no sense whatsoever. None of it makes any sense whatsoever. People are just mindlessly pathological with no causality at all. And it's really wild for me to see this sort of outpouring of love and affection and tears and wonder and sorrow about this total fucking creep who traumatized the planet and, in my opinion, lied about all the horrors of his childhood. And I believe that he lied about the horrors of his childhood, not because he was a victim, but because he was a victimizer. I think the only child figure in any of David Lynch's work was a midget in these strange hell scenes in Twin Peaks. Yes, I think so. So this is that was a strange midget, not just strange because of midget, but had a really wide face, like a two shovels strapped together. And he actually recorded the scene with the actors speaking all their dialogue backwards and then played it forward. So none of it made, I mean, you could kind of understand the words, but none of the human cadences made any sense whatsoever. Why? And it's just incomprehensible word salads that sound completely bizarre because he filmed it backwards, told them how to speak their lines backwards, and then played it forward. So everything seemed so bizarre. Everyone's just standing there staring into space while the midget says incomprehensible things. And then the midget starts dancing to jazz. The fuck? So deep, man. No, it's just pointlessly weird and violent, and it's there to provoke dissociation. I mean, his first movie, Eraserhead, is about an incredibly deformed baby. A number of free domainers tried to make Twin Peaks a thing back in, like, 2014. I'm just telling you, it's just soul repulsive. And I do not remember a single person who liked David Lynch who did not come to a pretty terrible end. Personally. Yeah, it was bad. It was very bad. It's a marker. It's a marker for an extremely, I can't tell you. I would never, I mean, back in the day, if some woman said, I like David Lynch films, and I said, well, I would basically say, well, you must really enjoy the absence of me leaving this date right now, because yikes, absolutely not. Let's just have weird people do strange things to happy music while everyone stares off and looks uncomfortable. Oh, I know. Let's have an old guy give a long speech about a dream he had to a young guy who doesn't understand what he's saying, and then let's have the old guy smile in self-satisfaction, pat himself on the back, and salute someone leaving, because that's so deep, man. It says something essential about the human condition. No, it just says, here's this fucked up guy. And David Lynch himself said that he was going to go into therapy, but then he said to the therapist, is it possible, because he said he had some compulsion, he didn't say what it was, he had some destructive compulsion. God knows, we're probably the world's better off not knowing. But he had some destructive compulsion. He wanted to go to therapy. He said to the therapist, well, could therapy affect my creativity? And the therapist said, well, it's possible. And he turned around and walked out.
Oof.
Yeah, I think I watched about 5 minutes of Twin Peaks. And I was like, this is brain rot. This is brain toxicity. This is brain rot. Yeah, he could have had that in common with J.D. Salinger. Yeah, I mean, it's like the orgy scene in Stephen King's It. It's a book I've never read. Oh, it's monstrous. Now, his films are all about this sort of idyllic 50s thing and then this absolute evil underworld underneath it that people need to see, right? And I assume since he grew up in a pretty idyllic 50s environment, and he did, he said it was paradise, like we could roam all day, we never spent any time indoors, I can't believe, he said it's so sad that we don't allow our kids to grow up that way anymore. What? Why did we let that happen? Well, because you're boomers and you're fucked. So he grew up in this idyllic 50s society, and his movies are all about the unbelievably horrifying crimes and violence and just completely sadistic, screwed up stuff. Not violence for profit, just violence for sadism. So he's got all of this cheery music, and there was this incredible cliche, you know, of like happy Italian singers with mafia machine gunning. It just became this real, hey, let's put on happy music. It's all the way through Fallout and shit like that, right? Oh, we'll put on happy music while horrifying things happen. We'll put on classical music and look, they're going to be baptizing their kids while there's all this gunplay. Look at all the deep irony. See, we're playing something pretty while something ugly is happening because that's really fucking deep, man. That's so deep. You know, it's deep like a sad clown. Like, because clowns are supposed to be happy, man. But if we show a sad clown like Joker, that's deep. And if we have something ugly going on while a pretty song is playing, that's deep, man. Don't you get it? It's a contradiction. Like you're hearing happy but seeing sad. That's so deep. Fuck off. Lazy, 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 lazy shit. Have you commented on physiognomy? Stephen King and David Lynch just look foul. No. Well, I assume that something absolutely appalling happened to him as a kid, because he'd construct all these bombs and so on, right? Yeah, those weird Andy Warhol things and all of that. Well, Andy Warhol was like doing nude pictures of little boys. I mean, he's just a complete, blech. So, yeah, it just fell. I only listened to a video of someone explaining the lore of Twin Peaks. It's basically a lore horror modern video game in TV form. Yeah, I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that means, but it doesn't explain anything to me. Maybe it does to others, so it could just be me. But yeah, so there's this pretty world, and then underneath this pretty world is this absolute savagery. Well, like the Five Nights at Freddy's series. Well, not, sorry to be annoying, not in particular, because the Five Nights at Freddy's series is mechanical things kind of gone haywire, but it's not specifically sadistic. So, as I say, Dennis Hopper rapes his fantasy of his mother while sniffing nitrous oxide. He rapes Isabella Rossellini while screaming that she's his mother. I mean, honestly, you couldn't get more vile. You couldn't get more vile. I say, ah, yes, but, you know, there is ugliness in the world, and, right, that we got to see it, and it's like, but not without a cure, right? Showing people savagery and evil and sadism and just completely screwed up things with no cure is just traumatizing them. It's like, imagine if you were running a medical school and you just showed endless shots of pustules and gangrene and black rot and, you know, just tumors that were eclipsing people's heads. And, you know, and you'd say, well, why are you showing me this? I mean, are we supposed to cure this? Oh, no, nothing can be cured. I'm just showing you just really, really ugly, nasty, putrid stuff. I mean, it's fine to show evil, but you got to show the cure. If you're just showing evil and virtue is helplessness, you're training people to submit to monstrous. You're training people to submit to monstrous. It is enabling and participating with the evils of the world to show evil hidden and ascendant and good blind and or helpless. No, thank you. This is why, you know, I'm always saying to people, if there are corrupt and evil people in your life, you don't have to see them. You don't have to spend any time with them. It is totally, completely optional. And there are good reasons to not. Somebody says, I'm okay with horror as long as it teaches actual principles, which reflect some aspect of reality. Folktales, for example, can be really scary, but they're meant to inform about the dangers of the world or symbolically describe real dynamics that influence us. But I know you're mostly talking about the meaningless horror stuff, for sure. Lynch was a huge proponent of transcendental meditation. He thought it was the way to save the planet. I mean, so transcendental meditation is an endless goal as a whole to overcome the horrors of your own bad conscience. It's an attempt to induce internal dissociation to avoid the horrors of your bad conscience. And he must have been a monster to live with, or he wouldn't have been divorced four times or had four marriages. And he was a Platonist as well. So David Lynch, and again, who knows what he really was? We can only go with what he said. But in an interview, David Lynch, he was more than a director, but David Lynch said that he believes that ideas are real, like they're real out there in the world, right? They're real and that they come into your mind from some other dimensional thing. So he also believed in reincarnation. We've been here before. So a complete mystic, and I've never met a mystic with a good conscience. I've never met a mystic with a good conscience because they need to invent another reality wherein they're not evil. And I read one comment on Twitter about a David Lynch movie where he said, yeah, my dad showed me like Twin Peaks when I was still in grade school and on the way to drop me off at my mom's place. He's like, yeah, maybe I should have waited on that one. Well, of course, you have to research movies before you show them to your kids. My God. Of course. Of course. So, I mean, Shutter Island is my favorite horror movie, and I find it super educational regarding evil. I remember watching that. I don't remember it too well. Maybe I should watch it again. Is it worth a review, Shutter Island? It's DiCaprio, right? An insane asylum. Maybe I'll check it out. I have a friend who writes stories about the protagonist in control of the monster to defeat the evil human antagonist who wronged the protagonist. Eagerly awaiting Steph's Nosferatu review, I feel like your interpretation can go either way. I probably will, in fact, wait for Nosferatu to be available on streaming because I'm in more control of what I'm watching when it's streaming. Obviously, I have virtually no control. Other than closing my eyes and covering my ears, I have very little control in the movie, right? Somebody says, I really liked the movie Psycho. It showed the reason Bates was crazy was because his mom was a monster. It even touched on parental interjects. Yes, but it also didn't explain why he felt susceptible to it. Have you seen the Nosferatu from the 70s? No. There used to be a guy back in the day. Boy, this would be back to Stephen Franzen's day, too. But there used to be a guy back in the day, Ned Esferatu. I remember him. Ned Esferatu on the old. We did a show or two together, I think. Ned Esferatu. That was pretty funny. Along with the Rodzillas and so on, we wonder. Currently residing in the Where Are They Now file. All right. Any other last questions, comments, issues, challenges? You know, it's not too bad to rent and watch something like Blue Velvet, because it is important to know where the culture is in terms of its examination of horror. I like Shutter Island because it depicts well how deeply people can lie to themselves. Oh, so it's like a paid CNN. CNN's free. You can just watch. I love that line. Everything she wrote was a lie, including the words and the. Herzog movies are fun. A strange German consciousness not often glimpsed in the mainstream. What is a movie of his? Werner Herzog. Is that right? Werner Herzog? Director. Werner Herzog. Who was the one who made Alexander... Berlin Alexanderplatz, like a 16-hour movie. let's see here. 60 films and documentaries, wow. What was... Oh, this is going to be way back. There was a movie about a film director it was set in the late 1930s, early 1940s. Klaus someone or other, and it was about a movie director who got slowly drawn into doing Nazi propaganda. Do you remember this at all? Gosh, what was his name? Yo, Thomas, showing up. Close to the end. Close to the end. Close to the edge, down by the water. Seasons will pass you by. All right. Gosh, what was it called? I watched it like twice. When I was in my early teens. I'll figure it out. I thought it might have been Herzog. But apparently not. All right. Sorry, I'm rambling. My apologies for that. Let me just see. You are fashionably late. Or you're fashionably early for the next one. Fashionably early for the next one. All right. Well, I will close off here. I do really appreciate everyone for dropping by tonight. We've had, what do we have here? $25. I'm working for below minimum wage on locals. Some people did send in through freedomain.com/donate, so I really do appreciate that. If you're listening to this later, I really would appreciate your help and support. Lots of love from up here, my friends. I will talk to you Sunday morning. And next Wednesday, the show is going to start half an hour late, but we'll keep a reminder with you about that. Just wanted to mention here, too, I have something else I have to get done first. Have yourself a glorious evening. Don't forget freedomain.com/donate and also freedomain.com/call for call-in shows. Did two big, meaty, juicy ones yesterday. Man, I was kind of tired after that. I'll tell you, man, it's a lot of concentration. Actually burns a lot of calories thinking. Really does. Look it up. And don't forget, of course, freedomain.com/books. And, you know, as a way of reminding you that a few people saw the disasters in California coming, you can also check out my documentary, Sunset in the Golden State, available at freedomain.com/documentaries. All right, enough yapping. Lots of love for my friends. Talk to you soon. Bye.